The Right Gear, episode 21, a conversation with David D. Levine. Hello, and welcome to The Right Gear on Hologram Radio, a podcast for writers that's all about the digital and analog tools we use to write. From computers and apps to pens and journals, we explore them all. I'm your host, K. Tempest Bradford, science fiction and fantasy author, freelance technology journalist, media critic, and lover of gel pens. In this episode, I have a chat with David D. Levine, a Hugo Award-winning author whose first novel, Arabella of Mars, is out this week. Though this is David's first published novel, he is not a newbie author, which is often the case, actually. Since the beginning of this millennium, he's published over 50 short stories. That's right, I said 50. And I bet you're dying to know what he uses to write all of those stories. Our conversation covers a lot of territory, from word processors to bygone technology to backup solutions to how he writes so many shorts. Take a listen. You've published 50 short stories, mm-hmm. So you've written a lot of things, mm-hmm. And now you have this wonderful novel. So talk to me about what you use to write all those 50 short stories.
I think I've written every one of those stories in some version of Microsoft Word.
Okay.
I did an awful lot of my writing for the first 5 or so years on an HP Mobile Pro. Mm-hmm. And the Mobile Pro was a little device about comparable in size to a paperback. It was maybe 10 inches wide, 4 inches front to back, and less than an inch thick. Mm-hmm. And it was a little clamshell thing, little micro laptop. And it would open up. The screen was half VGA resolution. So it was whatever VGA is, 1024 wide, and then half the height of a usual VGA screen in terms of pixels. It had a stylus, but I would usually just use my fingernail. And a little tiny chiclet keyboard. And the thing is, with my little tiny hands, I have hands smaller than Trump's. with my little tiny hands, I could type on that just fine. And man, that thing really was pocketable. Mm-hmm. And I did almost all of my writing on it for the first 5+ years of my career. I remember distinctly, we were at a Simon and Garfunkel concert, and I was writing the manuscript of my first novel on that thing during the long mic check thing of waiting for the concert to start. Mm-hmm. And I was just sitting there in the arena with the thing on my lap, typing away. And I love that thing. And there was at the time a small but vocal group of Mobile Pro fans. Mm-hmm. And when I finally decided that I had outgrown it, I handed it off to somebody else in that community. Uh-huh. Who needed a spare. I haven't seen one in a long time. But at the time when I got that device, I was considering the Alpha Smart, which I know you're a fan of. And the Alpha Smart has a lot of nice things to it. But it is big and comfortable to type on. Mm-hmm. But it's a little bit too big to be readily portable.
Right. It's not a pocketable device.
Yeah. I mean, it has a lot of advantages over a full laptop. But these days, it's not much smaller than a full laptop. As a matter of fact, mm-hmm. It's bigger than some full laptops. So the Mobile Pro was a lovely device, but it was giving me carpal tunnel because mm-hmm. the small keyboard, quite typable for me, but it did mean that my wrists were ankled in.
Okay.
And that's bad for them. It was during Clarion that Clarion West, technically, doing so much typing over such an extended period, I started to get tingling. I have avoided carpal tunnel. But I started to get the initial symptoms, and of course, with so many friends who've had carpal tunnel, I was very aware of what might be happening. So I ran out in the middle of Clarion and bought a Microsoft Natural Keyboard.
Okay.
And that is the keyboard that I have been using both at home and at work ever since. And with that, knock wood, I haven't had any carpal tunnel since then. But I stopped using the Mobile Pro for extended typing at least, and eventually drifted away from using it at all. And these days, I do most of my writing on a MacBook Pro. Mm-hmm. The keyboard on the MacBook Pro is it's adequate. It's never caused my hands any grief.
Right.
And I like the trackpad. I like the responsiveness of the MacBook trackpad a lot. It's one of the better trackpads I've used. Interestingly, I do my composing on a laptop, and I will generally, I actually type with it in my lap. I know that that's a position that doesn't work for everyone, but it actually does work for me. And so I can go almost anywhere, and I do a lot of my writing at a coffee shop down the street from my house, where you have been.
That is right. Yes. It's an awesome coffee shop.
Yes. Actually, the coffee there is terrible.
But you're not there for the coffee, yeah, really.
No. I choose this particular coffee shop not because I get together. One of the great things about Portland, Oregon is it's got a great writing community, and I have spent many hours writing in company with friends, and there's this one coffee shop that we've kind of settled on, which is literally two blocks from my house. But I favor that one not only because it's the closest coffee shop in the entire city to my house, but also because it has the most comfortable furniture.
It does.
And that really matters, because an awful lot of coffee shops have hard chairs, mm-hmm. and this one has nice, comfortable chairs. And I don't care for the techno music, but that's what headphones are for. So I usually type with my MacBook Pro on my lap. But when it comes time for editing, I like to have a big screen. And I have a 27-inch iMac at home that I use for editing, and I can have my notes in one window and the compose window in another, the composition in another window, and maybe research on yet a third window, and they can all be visible at once. Awesome. So you choose the tool that matches that matches your needs. I bought an external keyboard for my iPad Mini, mm-hmm. And the thing is, a keyboard for a Mini is by definition almost unusably small.
Yeah.
But I figured, well, it's no smaller than the Mobile Pro, and that one worked well for me. So I bought the keyboard, and I discovered that with the two-part gizmo, the keyboard and the iPad being two separate pieces, and this particular keyboard that I bought, the iPad would just set into the keyboard. They mm-hmm. weren't connected together. It wasn't something you could use on your lap.
Yeah.
It wasn't stable, and it would tend to fall off. And when it fell off, it was clatter, clatter. It was very distracting to the people around you, not to mention the possibility of damaging the hardware. So I only used that a couple of times, and I haven't used it since. Turning even an iPad mini sideways gives you an on-screen keyboard that is very nearly touch-typable. Mm-hmm. And I write a lot of notes that way, mm-hmm. but I haven't found it usable for composing fiction. I write all of my short fiction in Word, but anything novel length, I use Scrivener. I've been using Scrivener I picked up in the middle of the third novel that I wrote, so that was probably sometime around 2007, 2008. And Scrivener was around version 2 at that point. It was still fairly new, but already quite popular in the novel writing community. And I tried it, and I just loved it. Scrivener is an amazing tool, but it's, for some reason, I find it too heavyweight for short stories.
Okay.
It does so many things that I really don't need for short stories. Mm-hmm. For short stories, I've continued to use Microsoft Word, despite the fact that I despise Word and indeed all things Microsoft. But I've tried some other word processors, and none of them, they're all trying to do things that, as bad as Word is, and as much effort as Word expends on doing things that have nothing to do with the basic putting down of words on the screen, which is the primary requirement for writing fiction, Word tries to do way too much. But you can turn off the ribbon and all that shit if you really want to, and focus on the writing. Whereas other tools, they can do that job, but there's stuff like there are things that are fairly easy in Word that the other tools can do, but not quite as well, or they aren't quite as pretty.
And what have you tried?
I tried Mesis. I've used text edit. You know, the really basic text editor. And the thing is that little things like indents, like word count. You know, the basic mm-hmm. thing of having a word count on the screen mm-hmm. is something that most other tools do not offer, and Word does. It's right there in the footer. And the one thing that means that I keep having to pay Microsoft for Microsoft Word is that everybody uses Microsoft Word for revisions. If you're going to get, if you're going to get feedback back from an editor or a copy editor or what have you, you will inevitably get it in Word with revisions. And although many other tools will open Word files, not a lot of them will handle the revisions very well.
Right.
And frankly, Microsoft Word doesn't handle revisions very well either. But it
does. At least it's compatible.
It is compatible, yeah. I mean, the revisions feature is something that Microsoft seems to mess with on every single release, and they always make it worse. Mm-hmm. I really hate working with revisions in Word, but nonetheless, you have to. Mm-hmm. That is something that you just can't get away from.
Yeah.
But that's for short fiction. For Scrivener, for novels, I love Scrivener. I was a software engineer for many years, and I love Scrivener because it is an IDE, an integrated development environment, mm-hmm. for novels. Anybody that's worked professionally or even at a strong amateur level as a software engineer is familiar with the concept of an IDE, which is a single program in which you can edit your code and you can compile it and run it and debug it all without leaving the one program. And most IDEs have that tree structured thing down the left side of the screen showing all of your code. And then you push a button and it compiles all the code into the executable program. And a good IDE will do things like you start typing in a function name and it will auto-complete it. Mm-hmm. Or you can click on a function name and it'll take you immediately to the definition of that function or the documentation or show you what type it is, that sort of thing. It understands what you're working on. It's not just a plain text editor. Yeah. And Scrivener comes as close as possible to doing that thing for prose. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would love the ability to have it autocomplete my character names or be able to, you know, click on a character name and it'll take me to the character sketch for that character. And can't do that. But by using Scrivener's features of tagging and labeling and sorting and coloring and all those things that you can do, it can come closer to doing that than any other product I've ever used.
Okay. Do you feel like you use, you know, most of Scrivener's functionality? Because I know some writers, they use it, but they're like, I know I only use like 5% of what it can do. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you use more of the full breadth of what it can do?
Absolutely not. So features of Scrivener that I do not use include the ability to pull all of your research in. Mm-hmm. Because with my backup system, I am totally paranoid about backups. I use a tool called Chronosync to synchronize files between my laptop and the desktop. I started using Chronosync before Dropbox and the like existed.
Okay.
And I continue to use that rather than Dropbox because I am cheap. I have already paid for Chronosync, and if I wanted to use Dropbox for synchronizing between my different devices, I would have to pay for a pretty large amount of storage.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with using Chronosync to synchronize between my desktop and my laptop, the storage is all on my own spindles. And mm-hmm. I don't mind using the cloud. I prefer keeping stuff on my own storage. And I absolutely refuse to have the only copy of anything mm-hmm. be in the cloud. I want to have anything that's important to me, I want to have at least one copy on hardware that I own.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So I use Chronosync to synchronize all of my writing files and other critical files between my desktop and my laptop. Both of those devices are backed up using Time Machine. I probably, in case it isn't already clear, I'm a Mac bigot.
Yeah.
So I back up both of those machines using Time Machine. In addition, I back both of them up to an external hard disk at approximately monthly intervals using, SuperDuper.
Okay.
And then I also back up the desktop to another external hard disk, which actually lives in the trunk of my car, about every 2 months. So that is my in case of disaster, you know, in case the house burns down, backup. And I don't have them on an automated schedule. I just do it whenever I think of it, which is about once a month. It's supposed to be about once a month. We'll see how often it actually happens. But I have that in case of absolute disaster backup that lives in the trunk of the car. So with all those backups, if I drag my research materials into the Scrivener file,
mm-hmm.
then the Scrivener file, it really, really bloats.
Right.
If you put graphics or a copy of a web page or a PDF or something like that into the Scrivener file, then I think it actually translates it into RTF, which mm-hmm. uh, it, for its RTF has a lot of benefits, but it is not space efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So if you drag a serious amount of research stuff into your Scrivener file, then your Scrivener file, which internally is actually a directory, will just bloat.
Right.
So I keep my research materials in the same directory as my Scrivener file, but the Scrivener file I use only for the actual draft and one document of notes. In the research section of my Scrivener tree, I have my notes file, and then I have a folder of deleted scenes.
Mm.
So any scene that I delete completely, I'll just drag into the deleted scenes folder.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, the research tree in Scrivener is empty. My notes file is just a chronological diary of everything I've thought about the project as it continues. I just every day I write, I put in the date, and then any thoughts that occur to me while I'm working. I mean, some days I only write notes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might sit down for a writing session and write 3,000 words of notes, and that's the whole thing. Especially at the beginning of a project.
Right.
And then if nothing else, I'll put a note in the notes file saying how many words I wrote that day.
Interesting.
And that's just a one big chronological file, and usually that's something in the vicinity of 3 to 10 times the word count of the novel.
You said you keep your research outside of Scrivener, just mm-hmm. in another file. Is there a particular system that you use for that, or is it mostly just like Word files that have things, or PDFs of web pages?
Word files, PDFs, HTML files, text
mm-hmm.
files, whatever. You know, whatever form they come in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all just in there in the same directory with the novel.
Okay.
I have all of my short stories in one now humongous directory. Each of my short stories is kept in a file with a single code word, which is unique, and which never ever changes, even if the title of the story changes.
Okay.
I'll start off with the basic idea of a story. And in the case of Damage, for example, that was, you know, the basic the idea and the concept, and as it turns out, the title were all just that one word, Damage.
Mm-hmm.
But I have another story. It's just called Rat. And there are no rats in the story anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It completely changed over the course of development, but the keyword for the story is still rat. And so every file associated with that is called rat.
Mm-hmm.
The manuscript is called rat.doc. Previous versions of the manuscript are rat1.doc, rat2.doc, rec3, and so on. I've always meant to start using source control for mm-hmm. for my fiction, but I never have. I have a rat-notes.doc for the notes file, for where I keep my chronological notes.
Right.
I have a rat-ideas file where I keep the original idea, and that's what I start with, and then I shift over into using a notes file after I begin drafting.
Mm-hmm.
And then there'll be rat-contract.pdf. If I have one, or rat-audio.mp3,
mm-hmm.
if I record an mp3 of it. And so they're all just filed under that one keyword that never ever changes. And then in my tracking spreadsheet for submissions and sales, there's a tab labeled rat.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a tab for each, I have an Excel file with a tab for each story. And
yes.
Then each tab, I have a chronological thing. We just, you know, date out, date back, and result. Either R for rejection, A for acceptance, or other. I have a few other letters that I use sometimes,
mm-hmm.
and then a column of notes.
And so you keep track of your submissions and stuff just using a spreadsheet, like an Excel spreadsheet,
yep.
or
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I have an Excel spreadsheet, and then there's a macro that I wrote more than 20 years ago now at this point, and keep porting to newer and newer versions of Excel, that I push a button on the screen and it collects the current status of all stories that are on submission into a single sheet, a
wow.
single tab. So I can, with one glance, I can see where everything is.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, since I've been working on novels, I don't have a lot of short fiction out anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is that with the exception of 4 or 5 stories I trunked, everything I've written has sold.
Wow, that's cool.
I've been fortunate, but more important, I've been persistent.
Mm-hmm.
I have some stories that I kept pushing out into the market for 10 years until they sold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dozens of rejections, with the exception, as I said, of 4 or 5 stories that I trunked.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't trunked a story in quite a number of years.
When you sit down to write a short story, usually, are you the type of writer that's just like, I can just sit in front of a keyboard and go? Or do you have to like do a lot of planning either inside your head or on paper or anything before you can sit down and go?
I'm a planner, which is not to say that I haven't pantsed the occasional story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more experienced I get, the more I am able to fly by the seat of my pants.
Mm-hmm.
As a technical writer, I was a technical writer for years before I started writing fiction again. I wrote a lot of fiction in middle school, high school, college. Then when I graduated, I got a job as a technical writer, and I couldn't write fiction. Mm-hmm. I couldn't write fiction too much like the day job. I was a technical writer for nearly 20 years, and during that time, I didn't write a word of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But I built up some great skills, just in terms of typing, grammar, punctuation, all that, and structure,
mm-hmm.
and scheduling myself. So when I changed careers from technical writing to software engineering, I started being able to write fiction again.
Mm-hmm.
I took a lot of good habits from my technical writing days, and I had a lot of bad habits too. And I had to break myself. I'm fortunate that I have never actually used a bullet list in fiction.
All right.
Maybe someday I will, just for the lulz. So I built up a lot of good habits. Planning and outlining is one of the habits that I built up as a technical writer.
Okay.
So when I have an idea, I will open up my keyword dash ideas file,
mm-hmm.
and I will start by just talking it out on paper, just saying, okay, so I have this idea about, you know, let's say it's about a mechanical mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so what are some things that might happen to a mechanical mouse? And who is this mouse? And what kind of personality would a mechanical mouse have? And what kind of world would produce a mechanical mouse with sentience?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is this a fantasy story? Is it science fiction? What are the things, if we have a sentient mechanical mouse, let's say it's a fantasy story. So what are the things, what are there other sentient mechanical creatures? Are all of the characters mechanical critters, or is this a story about the mechanical mouse interacting with human beings?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I will put just, and I'm just making this up as I go along.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I will type exactly that, just as I said it.
Okay.
I type really fast, and I type, there's a lot of what if and maybe and but then if and perhaps. A lot of that stuff is in there, and I will just type it out. And after I've done that to some extent, and I have some kind of shape of the story in mind, often the next thing I will do is I will go through a questionnaire that I got from Pat Murphy at Clarion West, which is a series of questions about, you know, who is this person, what is it about their situation, what is it that they want, why can't they get it, what happens next, how could it be made worse,
mm-hmm.
You know, a series of questions that by the end of it I have a really strong idea of what kind of story it is and what the shape of the story is and who the characters are and what the situation is. And very often I will literally write out a bullet list of all the events in the story in chronological order.
Awesome.
And then what I do is I'll take that bullet list, I will copy and paste it into a new file for the draft. I'll put those bullet points in blue, mm-hmm. at the bottom of the file. And then as I begin typing and writing the draft, after I have done each bullet point, I'll just delete it. So the story starts off as a list of blue bullet points, and as it grows, it becomes more prose and fewer bullet points until, mm-hmm. I get to the end and I delete the last bullet point, and then I'm done. And very, very often, as I'm writing, at the halfway point and then again at the three-quarters point, I will stop and re-outline, mm-hmm. the latter part of the story based on what I've learned about the situation and characters. And very often I will come up with a completely different ending than I originally had in mind, but I always have to have an ending to write toward.
Right.
If I don't know how the story ends, I can't start it. And actually, when I have an idea, usually the first thing I come up with is either a setting or a plot,
mm-hmm.
and then the second thing is an ending.
Uh-huh.
And only then do I come up with a character, because that's how my brain works.
David, thank you for the conversation and for being on this podcast. I always have a great time talking to you. One more reminder for those of you listening, David D. Levine's book, Arabella of Mars, is out right this very moment, and you really should read it. By the way, one slight correction on a gadget David mentioned early in the conversation. It's actually the NEC Mobile Pro and not the HP Mobile Pro. And there's a link to it and the other gear that he uses now in the show notes. There's actually a lot more to our discussion, but I'm saving the juiciest bits about Scrivener for later episodes. Yes, we have some coming up that will be all about Scrivener for computers and for iOS. To be sure you don't miss them, you should subscribe to the podcast. You can do so via iTunes, Google Play, or whatever podcatcher you use via our RSS feed, which you can find at www.therightgear.com. David also talked about using Scrivener for making ebooks and a few of his best practices there. You want to hear that? Well, then you should become a sponsor of this podcast on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/ktempestbradford and become a patron at any level, including the $1 level, you get access to podcast extras, such as the one I just mentioned, plus more. And it's the best way to support the podcast if you enjoy it. And hey, a big shout out to my patrons who make this podcast possible. Coming up in the next few episodes, we're going to talk about journals and we're going to talk about digital pens and some other stuff. Plus, our first giveaway is happening very soon. And if you want to keep up with all of that, you can subscribe or follow us on social media. There are links to our Twitter account, Facebook page, and Google Plus presence at the website. Until next time, I'm K. Tempest Bradford, and I challenge you to write an entire novel on a keyboard that fits in your pocket. The Right Gear podcast on Hologram Radio is written and edited by yours truly and produced by Head Hologram Alex Knight. Our logo was created by Cosper Ashley Emma and made colorful by Hologram Michael Norton. Our theme music, Kill Your Darlings, was composed by Steve Combs.